There's been a constant crackdown by your office on gangs and violent crime. Give us a bit of an update of where we stand when we continue to hear these cases.
Well, as far as the gang prosecutions are concerned, you're exactly right, Eileen. Our office has brought more gang cases in the last 2 years than any time in recent past. We have had literally dozens and dozens of prosecutions ranging from formal gangs with names and tattoos all the way down to smaller narcotics trafficking conspiracies. And along the way, there's generally been very positive news when it comes to the violence which is often associated with gangs. Crime had been down, and frankly, the murder rate here is still lower than it was last year. But what is really of concern to me is the great increase in shootings that we've had just over the last month alone. By my count, we're over 48 more shooting victims as of today than we were last time this year. And it's time that all of us, I think, as a community, try to take a stand, and we all have to do our part.
Most noteworthy was the recent Martin Luther King Park shooting during the day, a busy park, very alarming for citizens.
That's exactly right. And that typifies, I think, what my hope is by getting out early and before the summer starts and appearing on this show. We had a case in the Martin Luther King case, birthday party, broad daylight, if you will, and yet we had a mass casualty event. As the public would know, no arrests yet. I know the city of Buffalo is reporting good leads, but that's another example of how the public can help.
How can the city and the Buffalo Police Department get out in front of it when there is so much fear of retribution, there is so much fear of being called a snitch within that culture and community that they don't want to be part of?
I think we need to tackle it head on. If there is this concern, if you will, of retaliation, fear, to use your words, my response would be, first of all, how is your quality of life right now? I'm told every day when I go to community groups that people are afraid to sit on their porches. They're afraid to walk outside. I was talking to a gentleman who said when he wants to go somewhere, he has to think to himself, what color clothes am I wearing? And am I going to be going through neighborhoods where maybe the wrong color will get me shot or robbed? And that's just not right. The only way the public is ever going to get over that particular cause of fear would be to, frankly, report who it is that's intimidating or terrorizing them and letting the city of Buffalo and the Buffalo police do their job. Secondly, when it comes to any belief that there's something heroic about not snitching, it's important for the community to realize that the people who are willing to pull their gun and shoot other folks aren't going to stop at just one victim. They're frequently multiple innocent victims in the same scenario. And as some of our prosecutions have demonstrated, these defendants are really modern-day serial killers, injuring, killing multiple people. We have cases with people accused of committing 5 murders, 7 attempted murders, just horrible stuff. But again, the message is the public has to contribute. They have to provide information if they know about it, and we can address what those other underlying issues might be.
The city has tried, and the police department over the years, to get control of the situation, and we've had some instances when the crime has gone down and the violent crimes have gone down. It obviously seems to continue to creep back up. They've worked with religious leaders and community groups. They work closely with your office, with the FBI, with the state police. Why isn't it really working?
Well, as I sometimes say to people, you could have Sherlock Holmes come back to life and investigate crime and not be able to solve a particular incident unless real live eyewitnesses are willing to testify to what they have seen. We have tremendous relationships with the city of Buffalo and the Buffalo Police Department, led by Commissioner Durenda. And I can tell you firsthand, all of the principal federal agencies that do these kinds of cases, FBI, DEA, ATF, IRS even, Secret Service, we are all unanimous that we want to take on this problem of violent crime. And yet, without witnesses to tell us who to look at or who to arrest, we can't do what we do, and that is put the pieces together for a compelling case at trial.
These gangs, is it... Are they national coming in here, or is it local creating their own?
largely it's the local creating their own. In some respects, it would be much easier for us to combat a gang if they're international or national. Under our federal racketeering laws, where we were one of the first districts, frankly, in 1991 to use RICO, that was the case of a group that said they were the Crips. They came to Western New York, and we used wiretap techniques. We used the federal RICO laws. We used a lot of statutes that we have in order to take down the entire enterprise. When you're dealing with a very small, locally based group, first of all, there's the elements that we need to show to bring a case in a federal court, and that is an impact on interstate commerce. But over and beyond that, if people tend to stay in a small, closely confined area, it's not as easy for police to intercept actual drug deals. There may be counter-surveillance. There's a whole host of challenges posed when it's a relatively discreet family, in some instance, operating on a particular street. And, of course, we've had a case just like that, which was led allegedly by a woman in her late 40s. So whether it's local, though, or the federal or a national or international gang, at the end of the day, the violence is the same. People do not have to tolerate violence. All they have to do, though, they have to report it. And then we in the federal government, working with our local and state and county partners, will do the rest.
Bill, if we can switch gears a little bit, talk about some of the recent arrests of the Buffalo police officers. You had a couple of cops on disability fraud, and then most recently another Buffalo police officer running a marijuana manufacturing business. How can people have faith in the people that are guarding the city?
Well, that's actually an excellent and related topic to what we're talking about to this point. Sometimes you hear people say they can't trust the police or they don't want to report information because it's not handled properly, or perhaps even the police officers are suspected of being part of the problem. I've always said to the public that it's a relatively small percentage of the problem, but what these recent cases you've just described, Eileen, indicate is that if I get reporting or our federal law enforcement partners get reporting of wrongdoing by any level of police officer or elected official, for that matter, administrative head, we will act. And for that reason, the public should have additional confidence that it's not just the gangsters that we're going after, but frankly, even the public corruption individuals. But with the public corruption piece now being as successful as it is, the public, for its part, has to have confidence that we will also do right by them when it comes to prosecuting violent criminals that they tell us are living in their midst.
Are you concerned that this is the tip of the iceberg with some of this?
On the public corruption side?
Yes.
Well, let's put it this way. Statistically speaking, it's always been a small percentage of a problem because people that generally are drawn to the law enforcement profession, they take the oath seriously, they want to serve, they want to protect. And over the years, we have not seen a big problem. And I have no reason to suspect it's suddenly some kind of a large problem here in Western New York. But what I am willing to say, whether it's the excessive force cases we prosecuted fairly early, whether it's insisting that the Erie County Holding Center provide constitutionally appropriate standards of care, or whether it's perhaps injured on duty officers ripping off the taxpayers of Western New York, or in the last example, running a drug operation, we're not going to stand for it. And all those cases you've described were jointly investigated by Buffalo Police or the local police agency, joining hand in hand with us at the federal level. So we have tremendous teamwork, collaboration here in West New York among the law enforcement professionals. But yet we're at 112 shootings for the year, way up, more than 40 from this time last year. That tells me we've got a problem that demands we don't just all sit on our seats. We've got to act. We got to do proactive work, such as this program, Eileen, and I thank you for it. But then also everybody has to do their part.
Will we ever see some pure gun control?
Well, I don't know. Of course, in this country, we have the Second Amendment, and people enjoy their firearms, and there's an absolute right to possess guns and to shoot them. Lots of sportsmen in the area, and that's a wonderful thing. What we're talking about here are these gangsters, in many cases under 30, but not always so, who are willing to shoot in a crowd, whether it be at the birthday party at Martin Luther King Park or whether it's on one of the streets on 7th and 10th on the west side of Buffalo, where on one day alone, two innocent victims at the same time were simultaneously murdered. One, a man in his 40s going to the corner store to buy something for his pregnant spouse. The other, a teenage young man. And that defendant, who we convicted in February, by the way, of this double homicide, he had done five other attempted murders after that particular shooting. So for that reason, sometimes silence can be deadly, because had people come forward right in Easter Sunday, 2006, these other five victims and incidents never would have occurred.
You've worked vigorously over the last few years to be out in the community and meet with the community members, as you mentioned earlier in the interview. How is that going for you, and what are you able to tell them to kind of calm their fears and let them know that you are out there, you know, completing this work and making sure that this is getting done?
Well, again, I really have taken it upon my office now to get out into the public, not just myself, by the way, Eileen, but all the assistant U.S. attorneys in my office are very active. Barbara Burns, our public affairs coordinator, is very active in the community, as are the federal law enforcement folks. But, you know, the most important thing from all of that is the public seeing us actually engaged, having an opportunity to take us aside and express some of their fears. And it's from that process, being in the public, that I have heard some of these stories of fear, of terror, and it's just not right. Everybody has an obligation. Say it's to yourself. You don't want to be the next victim. But more importantly, to the city, to humanity, to justice, to the country. To participate in the system, provide information if you see it. You don't have to fear retaliation. It's a very remote possibility. In the federal system, the vast majority of cases plead guilty, and the witnesses never have to come forward at all. But even when we need witnesses, we almost always, when our conviction rate is in the high 90%, it's just there's no reason not to come forward.
U.S. Attorney William Hochul, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eileen.